The title of this conference by Father John Hardin is Qualities of a Genuine Vocation. Father Hardin, a member of the Society of Jesus, is professor of systematic theology at the Bellarmine School of Theology, Loyola University, Chicago, Illinois. He is author of many books and articles published in the United States, Canada, and Europe. His latest book is Christianity in the 20th Century. Father Hardin is a lecturer and consultant to various national, religious, and educational enterprises. He is renowned as a retreat master and spiritual director. Father Hardin has been a consultant to the consortium from its beginning and is closely associated with its interests as a communication enterprise for religious women in the United States. Father Hardin.
The concept of vocation began in God's revelation with the calling of Abraham. And over the centuries of revealed history, beginning with the father of all the faithful, vocation has had a very specific meaning for those, whether in the old law, believed in Yahweh, or in the new, believe in Jesus Christ. Vocation, broadly conceived, is always selective on the part of God. Selective in the persons whom he calls, in the purpose which he intends them, whom he calls, to fulfill. And what is most important for us, as a kind of model for our retreat, it is selective and infallibly promissory in the graces which he confers on those whom he calls. God never calls vainly. We might for just a moment reflect on this first feature of vocation, its selectivity. It really means that God exercises special providence over certain people. And it is not that he is a respecter of persons, but that he is a chooser of certain persons for the work that he intends them and no one else to fulfill. A second feature of all vocations, which I think bears emphasis, is that even though vocations are received by individuals, Abraham was called as an individual. The apostles were called as individuals. We have been called as individual persons. Nevertheless, as vocation is seen in Revelation, it is always communal in character. In other words, a person is called for a special task, but always within some concept of community. In the old law, it was the chosen people, plural, of God. In the new law, it is the Christian people, the people of God, plural. In other words, the context of every vocation, though directed to an individual, is communal. A third feature of all vocations is that it is sovereignly free. Free on the part of God who calls. He chooses, as we know, whom he wills. And on our part, it is correspondingly free. God need not call, and tragedy, we need not respond. Again, though we may perhaps, because of the use of language, think of vocation as a once and for all affair, in other words, that God calls, and then use the past tense, we had a vocation. Properly speaking, a vocation is a constant thing. God keeps calling. It is therefore progressive. It is meant to grow, to deepen. Vocations are living realities. They are not episodes in our lives. Again, looking at all vocations broadly conceived, there are two sides, as we briefly try to point out. Was it this morning we had? The Jubilee Mass, I have to recall my memory. There are two sides to a vocation. There is God's, where he confirms the grace. There is ours, if we respond, which is our commitment. Taken together, they form a covenant. And a covenant, as we saw and will see more than once before the retreat is over, is a mutual promise. It is a bilateral agreement. God to us in calling us, we to him in responding. He will never fail. We know, sadly, we can. Finally, every vocation is by prior definition meant to sanctify the one who receives the call. But it never ends there. And the very sanctity that we are to achieve and the holiness on which we should so strenuously work, though in one sense it is terminal, because we are to be sanctified, it is also, and for our purpose most importantly, it is a means, an apostolic means, to help save and sanctify others. It is therefore the essence of every vocation that it be apostolic. In other words, all true vocations confer on those who receive them a deep sense of mission. They are not satisfied with finding God for themselves. Having found him, they want to share him with others. So much, perhaps a bit woodenly, about what are vocations in general. I thought for some time where I should begin the retreat. Where do you plug in today's revolutionary world? Where do you start, knowing well that the beginning is important, and the stress placed at the start of a retreat should I hope leave a strong impression, I decided that we would begin the retreat by reflecting on our vocation to the fullness of Christianity. A moment's reflection will tell us that if there is anything selective in this world, it is surely our vocation to Christianity. Imagine after 19 centuries, most of the world is still not Christian. We are, but only because we have been called. And whatever other vocation we reflect on, and there are other vocations, as we shall see, I think we cannot begin on a more solid ground than to reflect and become more conscious, perhaps, than we have been, of what it means to have been called by Christ to be one of his followers, and the responsibilities which this vocation to Christianity lays upon us. It is therefore a true vocation, surely. A fraction of the human race, and over the centuries a still smaller fraction of the humanity since the time of Christ, of which we are a privileged part, shows selectivity on the part of God. He chooses whom he wills. But, and I want to accent this, we especially in the Anglo-Saxon part of the world, which is in such large measure a mixture of what shall we call them, varieties of Christianity, traditions, styles, we Catholics have got to be more sure than I think Catholics had ever been, even in the 16th century, of our having been called not merely to Christianity, but to Catholic Christianity. In my opinion, a large part of the confusion in which Catholics in our society find themselves is that unwittingly, and as we now can say complacently, they had taken for granted that they were Catholic and others were, well, they were Christians too, without realizing how strong has been the cultural pressure on us Catholics to become part of, for us, the American landscape, which, to put it mildly, is not Catholic. It is not enough, and I cannot accent that negative too strongly. It is not enough to say we have been called to Christianity. In the mysterious providence of God, we have been called to Catholic Christianity. And the clearer our concept of what that vocation means, and the differences, to say the least, which this implies between us and them, for example, two sacraments are not seven. A minister who is a mere functionary of the lay trustees of the parish is not a priest ordained by God. And the local vestry, which such authority as it exercises, is not the infallible magisterium of the Roman primacy. Are we going to look back and see what the call to this vocation means? It is a grace that was freely received. In other words, God chose us to confer the grace that being a Catholic it lies. But, and what an important adversity of that is today, as I see some of my former priest students leave the active priesthood, abandon the faith in which they were reared, and in which, may God forgive me if I have failed them, I try to help them be the priests that God wants. Whatever else we should say about this grace of the vocation to Catholic Christianity, though it was freely conferred by God on us, we now know it is only freely. And with what freedom, kept by some, abandoned by others. Part of the crisis, and somewhere near its center, I think, for us Catholic Christians, certainly in our society, is the fact that the seed sown by baptism, in which we received the grace of our vocation to the Catholic faith, is choked by the cultural pressure of a hedonistic society. And sisters, believe me, none of us is immune to that pressure. Whatever I may have said, giving retreats, even as recently as 5 years ago, I can no longer say today. I can no longer take for granted that every religious, honest, is a believing Catholic. What are some of the responsibilities incumbent on us, which is, after all, the main focus of the retreats? As I have to remind myself when I give a retreat, remember, Harden, you're not lecturing, you're giving a retreat. It is not merely that we should hear, I hope not, unenlightening things. We ought somewhat to apply the truths that we hear under the inspiration of grace to ourselves. So we have been called to the Catholic Church, the primordial vocation on which everything else rests. So what? So we cannot, as we used to, I include myself, take that for granted. And a large part of the retreat, I think, is to look at that first vocation to to which we have been called, to see what God expects of us, because he didn't call everyone. The first and obvious responsibility incumbent on us is to preserve that to which we have been called. In a word, to preserve the true faith. Last week I finished a retreat for my Jesuit brethren. It happened to be an 8-day retreat. Actually, we started on the 1st, and we closed on the 10th day. All through the retreat, I knew what they wanted me to talk about. The cost of remaining true to the Catholic faith today. If there was ever an age of martyrs, ours is one. And just because we have so far been spared, most of us that is, the prospect, I like the word, the prospect of physical martyrdom, I think you will agree with me, to remain a good Catholic today, within convent walls or outside, means often practicing psychological martyrdom. And one of the things that your community can thank God for is that you're not called upon to so witness, sometimes under anguished desperation, within your own community. A second responsibility following from this vocation to Catholic Christianity is that we might live up to that to which we have been called. In other words, professing our faith, professing it especially by the lives that we live. It means that we are not afraid or ashamed or embarrassed to be recognized for what we really are. A further responsibility, not only to retain what we have received, live this vocation, but to share it with others. I wanted to make sure that I put this early in the retreat, because so much of our need today is the need for that sense of mission I referred to before. The realization that the closing verses of Matthew's Gospel, "Go ye therefore, teach you all nations," is an obligation incumbent on every Christian. None of us will reach heaven alone. Either we'll help others get there, or we shall not reach heaven ourselves. We share this faith as we know, mainly by what we are personally. And if there was ever an age that is impatient with hypocrisy, it's today. All phony Catholics will disappear. And that includes religious and priests. It also means that we take every occasion in the people we meet, ostensibly by chance, but nothing, as we know, with God just happens, to talk about the things of God. It means when occasion arises, and it will more often than you expect, defend this faith. Let no one, I hope everyone in this chapel agrees with me, let no one ever in our presence speak disparagingly of the vicar of Christ without our somehow showing at least our deep displeasure. But sisters, to live out that formula today, take it from a man who is trying to do so, is not easy.
This conference is continued on Side B.